Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hansen, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show. What's happening? Guess what? I've got some great news. Tomorrow, I leave for Arkansas, so I'm going to go hang out at Camp Fi. If you haven't heard of this before, it's called Camp FI, stands for Financial Independence. I think you guys probably all know that, but if you don't, it's this really cool movement where financial independence is kind of whatever the heck you make it mean for your life. So I won't get into that, but I'm going to go there. I'm speaking and I'm just looking forward to meeting some cool people and just hanging out. So if you're going to Camp FI, I'm so stoked to meet you. We're going to have such a great time. All right, guys, today we got a little bit nerdy. In a great way, as we typically do. So I got the chance to sit down with Chad Carson, who is a real estate investor, and I loved the conversation. He really demystifies a lot of the nuances behind real estate investing and made it so easy to understand that I was like, God bless you, Chad. Thank you for doing that. It was so great. So before we dive into that, I think you all know I'm a big, big fan of hearing what you are up to. But you have to communicate with me, right? So it's kind of like a two-way conversation. So I'd love to hear more about what you're doing in your life, some of your really amazing money wins. And if you haven't already joined the private Facebook group, Manage Your Money Like a Boss, head over there, ask to join. You will be connected with almost 1,800 people that are amazing and at very different stages in life. So I think there's definitely something for you in that group. If you're not really a Facebook group person, I understand. Come hang out with me on Instagram. That's where I spend most of my time. So you can come say hi. Join me on my Instagram stories. I do some really weird things and you get a more behind the scenes look into my business and my life. So if you're into that kind of thing and you want to come say hello, then that's the place to be. And it's at Whitney_Hansen_co. Speaking of money wins, this one was really exciting and very much on topic. This one came from Josh. Josh says, I'm finally starting to focus my savings for a down payment for my first real estate property. Looking to buy a place within the next year. Hashtag money win. Josh, that is so incredible. And I actually think this episode with Chad is going to help you. So really good timing on that. But I'm really excited to see that you're starting to prioritize investing in real estate in your future. It's not for everybody, but I think for those that can swing it, I think it's a really great opportunity. And that's one of the things from interviewing all these people is I've noticed a lot of people that hit financial independence or just retire early with some type of passive income are investing in real estate. So it's an important piece too, if that's something that's in your cards. So congrats to you, Josh. I'm so, so excited to see how that process goes. All right, let's dive into today's guest. Chad Carson is an early retiree who used real estate investing to reach financial independence. He has a new book called Retire Early with Real Estate that teaches others to do the same. I think you guys are going to love his book too. Just from this interview, I can already tell his book is probably very simple, straightforward, and easy to understand. But before he was in real estate investing, he graduated from Clemson University, where he was a Rhodes Scholar finalist and a two-year captain of the football team as a linebacker. Soon after college, when Chad was 23, he had a business partner, and they started to actually just invest in real estate from scratch. So they figured out a way to do it and said, let's do this together. He's got a great story behind that too. Today, they own a portfolio of 90 rental units. Yes, 90, and private mortgages. Chad focuses on using real estate income to retire early and do what matters, which for him is spending time with his family. For example, in 2017 and in 2018, he, his wife, and his two young daughters lived in Ecuador in South America. For 17 months. It's amazing. He also enjoys teaching, getting outdoors, exercising, and working on local community projects like pedestrian and bike paths. In this episode, we get a little bit nerdy. We talk about how he got started into the real estate industry, what life was actually like living in Ecuador for 17 months, his definition of financial independence. Guys, it's one of the best I've heard so far. How to figure out how many properties you truly need to retire and take care of the bills financially, what to look for when you're financing one property versus 10 properties, so some things start to change, and so much more. I think you are going to really enjoy this, and don't forget to tune in to the end to hear his answers to the three rapid-fire questions. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Guys, I'm so excited to introduce you to Chad Carson from CoachCarson.com. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. Today we are going to learn more about real estate from my new friend, Chad Carson. Chad, it's an honor to chat with you. Thank you so much for hanging out.
Whitney, thanks for having me. I love being on the Money Nerd podcast because that is how I consider myself as well. So this is like a pleasure.
Well, we're in good company then. This is a good thing. So we're a pretty strong community. We're all a little bit closet money nerds in some ways. Me, not so much, but it sounds like you not so much either. So tell me, How did you get into personal finance?
Well, so when I graduated from college, I was always interested in money, you know, just here and there, but I was a biology major in college in German. Like I had nothing to do with business, money, any of that. But, I decided rather than go in some of the routes that my career would have taken me, like medical school is what I was thinking about, perhaps, that, being an entrepreneur would be fun. So I just thought, hey, you know, I could learn about money while I really have not much to lose. And I had a college scholarship to play football during college. So I didn't have any college debt, which was very fortunate for me. Nice. And so I was able just to sort of jump into the entrepreneurial game without having a lot to lose. And that got me interested in money, obviously, just because I had to put food on the table and I never had a guaranteed paycheck. Yep. And so I was actually learning how to flip houses and find deals. And that got me into real estate specifically. But it was really more of like an entrepreneurial business because it wasn't as much about long-term wealth building as much as just, I've got to put food on the table for the next few years. And so it just made me realize that I've got a budget. I've got to understand my money. I've got to know where it's going and then eventually start saving it and trying to build wealth with it.
Tell us about your first property. How did that deal go down?
Well, so the very beginning, like I was just going out and finding deals for other people. So like it was a really simple like business model for me. Like so my first deal was basically took me 6 months to actually find anything. And I was looking like every single day and talking to realtors and sending letters out. I mean, it was the number of hours, like if anybody's ever tried to find a real estate property, they get frustrated because they feel like they've done it a lot and it hasn't worked. Well, that was pretty much me. I spent hours and hours. And so my first property was just a little simple rental property in Noonan, Georgia, where I lived at the time. And it was, you know, just very basic. And it was a foreclosure property that the bank had taken back. And I found the deal. And the good thing about what I was doing at the time, though, it was I was finding them for other investors. And they, in the real estate world, some people call that a bird dog. I don't know. I'm from the South, so maybe that doesn't resonate with anybody else. But like, it was like basically like I went out and pointed out deals like a bird dog did, like these old hunting dogs, and said, "There's the deal. All right, investor who actually has money, you go buy the deal." And then I made a little fee, basically for finding that deal for the other investor. And that's how I got started. I learned the business, made a little bit of money, and then after a year of doing that and actually finally finding some success finding deals, I went out and figured out how to start buying them with a business partner. The two of us have been in business ever since then.
Wow. So how many years now have you been doing real estate investing?
16 years. So that's when I started right after college, and 16 years later, here I am.
That's amazing. Long time, yeah. My friend. I'm impressed.
And I survived. That was the important part.
Totally, right? I can imagine that you'd be pulling your hair out at least a little bit.
Yes, for sure.
So you've got a wife and you've got two kids. How old are your kids now?
I have a 5-year-old and 7-year-old, two daughters. So it's a lot of fun.
Oh, God bless you. It's a lot of work.
They're awesome. I think I was meant to have daughters because it's just been amazing. And they're a lot of fun. And every morning I wake up and they're like, daddy, daddy, you know, so it's, they keep me grounded.
I bet they do. Do you get them involved with the business as well? Or are they too young for that?
A little bit. Yeah. So like we started talking about money, actually at FinCon last year, I got our big financial conference. I got a book on money. And so like we read books at night before we go to bed and I've started sharing that. And, you know, it's, you know, kids always ask what you do. And as an entrepreneur and a real estate investor, it's a little tricky. It's like, all right, I asked them like specifically, like, what does dad do? He's like, he sits at a computer and he talks on the phone. I'm like, oh no, that's not good. I was like, all right, I got to start telling them what I do. And so like with real estate specifically, I say, you know how we're living in this apartment or this house and, you know, somebody actually owns that or you either rent that or you buy that. And what we do is there's people who need housing and they need a nice place to live. And we keep the house nice for them or the apartment nice for them. And we provide it to them. And we offer a good, you know, we help them out by letting them live there. And then they give us money and we use that money. Like, so when we're going to the store or we're going to the, you know, somewhere, we'll invest the money that we got from those rental properties. And we now, you know, those people who are living there are helping us buy food. And so just trying to show how this, you know, there's a circulation of service and help. And I'm working on that. I'm trying to kind of orient money that way. This is the way we help each other. And this is what a job is. You provide a service money, and housing is the tangible, easy one, I think, for kids to understand.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense too. I for sure understand. Yeah, and I can imagine like talking to a 5-year-old about real estate investing would be a little bit difficult.
Yeah, and blogging is harder, so I don't even go there.
For sure, for sure. So tell me about this trip. So you and your wife and your two kids decided that you were going to retire early and then go live in Ecuador for 17 months. Okay, how did that start? What was the idea behind that? And tell us about the trip. Give us all the deets.
Yeah, so when my wife and I first met, I mean, it was like first date or something. We talked about going abroad. Like I didn't go abroad. I went abroad a little bit in college, went to Germany, and my wife majored in Spanish and is a Spanish teacher and is like even more than I have, just like took off and went to Guatemala for months on her own. And her family thought she was crazy. Like they were rooted in St. Louis and they're like, who is this child we have who's like traveling the world and like throwing caution to the wind. So that's my wife. And so when we met, we just knew that we wanted to do a lot of traveling. And so once we had kids, we did a lot of traveling pre-kids. And then once we had kids, we took a few years off for long-term travel. And like, that's really what we're passionate about, is not necessarily like we used to do some backpacking, jumping from one place to another, which is awesome too. But more with kids, our style now is like this really slow travel where you get to enjoy a place. Specifically with us, we wanted our kids to learn a language. So they're, you know, when we left, they were 3 and 5. And so that's a really good language acquisition time, just in terms of being able to speak fluently and understand the language. And so we knew we wanted to go somewhere in the Spanish speaking world. We didn't know where. We like started looking on maps and, you know, a couple of years out, like start thinking about this. Like, all right, when the girls are, you know, 3 and 5, I think that'd be a good age. And so we started planning it financially, you know, with my business and making sure we had enough money. And then, but also just like logistically, we thought we were going to go to Argentina because we really fell in love with that country and went hiking in Patagonia before we had kids and really loved that. So that was, we still love Argentina, but we were looking at the cost of traveling down there and we knew we'd have to come back a couple times. It was just a lot more expensive to get there. And we had a friend who recommended Ecuador, which is a smaller country, Northern South America, really awesome, safe place with neat place. They have rainforest and they have all mountains up in the center part of the country where we ended up going. And then they have the coast and the Galapagos Islands. So it's just all this diversity and this amazing place and just friendly people. So we decided to go there and we went to a city called Cuenca, Ecuador, up in 8,200 feet up in the Andes Mountains, this beautiful green lush valley. And our kids went to school every day. We enrolled them in local schools and just sort of threw them in the deep end. They had to learn how to speak Spanish after having like 15-20 words before we got there. Wow. And they did, you know, it was a little struggle at first, but I think we all grew, they grew. We had a lot of family time, which was really what financial independence is about for me at this point, is like, you know, every phase of your life, you have different things that are really important to you. And they're not directly related to money, mm-hmm. but money gets in the way of those things. Like, so for me, you know, being able to spend more time and walk my kids to school every day, exercise more, write a blog, like these things that didn't necessarily make money for me. These were passion things that they're important to me and to my wife. And so having rental income steadily coming in without a lot of my time invested producing that, mm-hmm. allowed those other things to happen. And so that's kind of my picture of financial independence and really what my passion is for helping other people, because I know everybody has those things. You know, there's those things that when you were 16 or 18 years old and you were idyllic and you're like, you know, this is what I want to do when I'm bigger. I don't want to kind of get in the cog and be just a part of this machine. I want to do something special and do what matters. And so financial independence and being good with your money can help you do all those things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. I think that's like a very good message to hear. At that time when you were traveling too, how many rental properties did you have?
So we have a total of 90 units, and I'll qualify that by saying I have a business partner. So it's half and half.
You know,
half of it's mine, half of it's his. And so like, I'm always a little cautious of saying that because I've been in this full time for 16 years and I do this every day. This is my job. And so I actually have more properties than I need probably. We're going to be culling that down, mm-hmm. and definitely more properties than I think most people need to actually reach financial independence. I think it's, you can have a lot fewer. I know I have a lot of friends and actually profiled a lot of people in the book I wrote on, you know, I just want to see like, what are other people's financial independence with real estate look like? And there were many people, and I asked every one of them, I said, you know, how many properties do you actually need in retirement to be happy, to do what you need financially? And the consistent answer was, you know, 5, 10, somewhere in there. You know, some people said one or two, and you know, I'd love to go into the math at some point with that, like why that's possible. And so you can keep it super simple. I guess that's my message. If you have one property, two properties, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. If you have 10 properties and you or 20 and you want to go bigger like I've done, you know, that works too. But it's very flexible, and you don't have to be like this huge real estate empire to actually reach financial independence, to do things that you want.
Oh yeah, we're definitely going to get into the math for sure. Before we do that, let's talk a little bit more about Ecuador. So 17 months there, and then you came back to the States. So why 17 months? Is there like a magical number behind that?
Not really. We knew we were going to go for a year, and then we loved it so much, and we had so many friends that we made there that we like, we can't come back. And you know, that's one of the cool things about financial independence is that, you know, I'm mobile. I have a few things like a couple hours a week I still do with my real estate business, but I can do it anywhere in the world. And there's no boss telling me, hey, you got to come back at this date. And there was no, you know, it was mainly family, you know, like the grandparents of our kids were starting to wonder if they'd ever be able to see their grandkids again. And we said, yeah, we're coming back. You know, we kept pushing off, but it's just flexible. We knew we wanted 12 months, and we actually considered our tenants in our house said, yeah, we'd love to rent another year if you want to extend it again. And we're like, oh man, that would be awesome. And we considered it for a minute, but I don't know. We decided to come back.
Yeah, kids make things difficult. I shouldn't say it's kids. It's more the grandparents. I think you're spot on. Too exactly. Funny. I love that you were able to take your kids on this adventure too, because that's something that's going to stay with them forever. That's going to be a lifelong memory. And just the fact that they have experienced a different culture at such a young age. I mean, what a cool thing to put your family through. I think that's very impressive.
Thank you. Well, we said our kids are going to be like amazing, or we're going to totally screw them up. And either way, that's probably our job as parents, right? But there's no doubt that we got to spend a lot of time with them. And that's the thing that's just been, as I reflect on this journey we took and what money mastery sort of has done, it's totally disconnected this time, work time continuum where we always, you know, you have to work this much time. And so when they came home from school or I picked them up, I was able to be there, and we're able to eat almost every meal together. And, mm-hmm. You know, all those little things, whether you're a parent or you're just with your spouse or partner or whoever, you know, it's all those like little, quote, unimportant times when life really happens. And I know in my own experience, when I was in the grind and I'm working, which, you know, I'm a hard worker. I love working too. But like, if you don't take those times to have like space out in between your life where you take these mini retirements or you take these breaks, whether it's 2 weeks or a year or whatever, and actually like slow down, you sort of miss those little moments. And we Americans are so, so prone to that because we're good at working and we like to work and we're hard workers. And yet, you know, as I've traveled in Latin America, I've learned so much from that culture in general, you know, it's a generalization, but there is a lot more appreciation of slowness and appreciation of family and appreciation of friendships and going, you know, you go on a Sunday in a park in Ecuador when we were there, and there would be extended families everywhere sitting around with picnics and strolling and talking. And even during the week at lunchtime, you'd have people, you know, sitting. So it was just, I think there's a value, a balance a little bit more of having, you know, understand, yeah, money's important, work's important, but let's like know why we're doing that. And actually, like when we get to a plateau where we've done pretty well financially, actually take a break and enjoy the fruits of your work.
I think we're all on the same page, man. So we're all nodding our heads saying, yes, we want this life. So how do we get there? How do we know what our rental number is so we can officially retire and maybe live in Ecuador?
Yeah. So I always tell people that I'm not like a genius in math, and that's a good thing with real estate. So like, you know, you can work this backwards really simply. Like, you know, I know in the financial community, there's all sorts of terms like, you know, the 4% rule and all the, you know, these things where you have to live off your income. How much do you have to have? And people have crazy spreadsheets. Well, I think it's pretty simple with real estate, and it starts with personal finance, which I know you talk to so many people about, like it's understanding what your number is, like what do you really need? Like translate, like in your life, like just think about, you know, your ideal life or just your typical life and say like, what would that be and how much money would it take to pay for that? Mm-hmm. And it's when I ask people that, it's like, sometimes you get like deer in headlights, like, I don't know, you know, but I just said, don't try to be perfect with that. Just start with something. And, you know, you can start maybe going a month or a year and start tracking your expenses and just get some round number. It doesn't have to be perfect. And often I actually did a survey in the book. I surveyed 850 people who were on my website and Bigger Pockets and said, how much do you need? What are your expenses that you would need to cover to be financially independent? And what would you guess it was? I'm just, because I ask everybody and think, like, just out of that group of people, these are entrepreneurs, investors, what would you guess the average yearly income is that most people said?
Probably maybe 50 grand.
You know your audience.
Is that what it was?
It was 60. It was like, right. It was close. I had a range there. So I had $40,000 to $60,000, and that was the median choice. There was other choices like 200,000, above 200,000, yeah. 30,000. And so I tell that to people, not because if your number is 150,000, that's fine. Like whatever it is, but you don't have to like shoot for the moon. There's a lot of people out there who say, you know what, if I can make 50, 60 grand a year, I would be totally happy. And yeah. So like with real estate, let's start with that. Let's say you need to cover 60,000 a year, mm-hmm. Just to have like a nice foundation. You don't have to, you know, have the pressure to work. You know, what would that look like? And so I work it backwards and sort of reverse engineer it and say, like, what if I owned a certain number of properties someday, maybe it's 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now, mm-hmm. and I didn't have any debt on these properties, so I paid off all of the mortgages, and I'll talk about that a little bit more, why that is in a second. Okay. You know, how many properties would I have to own to pay me $60,000 a year or $5,000 per month? And so let's just do some really basic math. This is where it's not that complicated. Mm-hmm. Let's say we found a rental house that had a $1,000 per month in total rent. In the, you know, the real estate world, we call that gross rent. So you're like your total rent that you could collect from your tenant. And let's just say like half of that rent is gone in expenses. And I say half because that's just a nice round number. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. But that'll be things like taxes, property taxes, insurance, maintenance on the property, paying a manager to manage the property, and also setting aside some money for like replacing your roof someday and replacing other things, heating and air. So all of that would go into that. You know, you deduct $500 from that $1,000 in rent. And what do you have left over?
We've got $500.
So, you know, simple math. And so like that one little single family house, it makes $500 per month or $6,000 per year. And so how many houses do we need to have if each one makes 6,000 and we need to have 60,000 bucks per year?
It's 10 houses, right?
10 houses. That's it.
Dang. That is easy.
So that's really, I mean, it sounds kind of like basic and hey, where's the spreadsheet? Where's all the fancy math? But like, that's really as basic as you need to get. And so, you know, I know some people are going to say, look, I don't want to own 10 houses. That's crazy. I'm gonna have to manage all those properties. Mm-hmm. And some people are going to say, you know, I can't, 60,000 bucks, that's not enough. I need 120,000 to live in a high cost of living area where I am or something. And mm-hmm. like all of that is fine. Like the point is whether you need 10 or whether you need 5 or whether you need 20, like you work it backwards and you say, all right, well, stage one is I need to go out and acquire 10 properties. Hmm. I need to buy them. And there's different ways to do that. Like the typical way, if somebody's okay with having some debt, some leverage in real estate, mm-hmm. real estate's an awesome leverage tool because you can go out and put 20% down or in some cases with your residence, you might even be able to put 5% down or 10% down and get a 30-year fixed mortgage at 5% interest these mm-hmm. days. And so you could acquire, let's say you acquired one property per year for the next 10 years. That's kind of a nice manageable type yeah. goal or project. So you did, you know, the next 10 years, I'm going to buy a property a year. And then the next 5 to 10 years, I'm going to spend paying those properties off. And within, I mean, you could do it a lot faster and I could definitely show ways to do that. But like within, you know, 15 to 20 years, if you're 30 years old, for example, by the time you're 45, 50, you could easily have that $60,000 a year coming in, not to mention you have other savings. You might have your 401k, you have all the normal stuff you'd be doing, but that's a way you can use real estate to get them paid off, make income, have that coming in, mm-hmm. and then kind of have that for the rest of your life.
How does it work? So for somebody that maybe say they're making a combined $60,000 a year, we'll just say it's just standard partnership, marriage, maybe a couple kids, kind of like you. Mm-hmm. So yeah. If they are not entrepreneurs, but they're in typical 9-to-5 jobs, how does it work for the loan? So do you have to make enough to be able to support all of the rent payments on all 10 properties, or am I getting a little too paranoid there?
No, that's a really good question. So financing is always a limitation in real estate. And so typically what happens is the first 4 to 5 properties are, most people can get those. And the reason why is because they're going to, if you get a, if you buy one property per year and you get that property rented out and you have, you can show that, hey, over the last 12 months, this property has been rented out. Mm-hmm. When you go to get the next loan, they're not just going to look at your personal debt to income, which they will look at that. Mm-hmm. But they, if a good lender will also take into account the fact that you have rent coming in enough to cover your expenses and your mortgage. And so if you buy a property correctly and you make sure it has enough income to cover everything, which is really important, then you can, it's a safe growth process where you always have, you're kind of building that income of your rental properties while you also have your personal income. And a good lender will look at both of those and say, all right, that's, they do have a rent. They've demonstrated that they know how to manage a property. They've demonstrated that that rent's coming in for the last 12 months. We'll give them credit for that on the loan application. And so that's important, but there are some like some hiccups as you get to like five properties. They do start looking at things like how many, you know, they want to know that you have more reserves. There's some blank banks that might cut you off at five. There's some that might cut you off at 10. The typical number is 10. Actually, that's why another good reason to have 10 properties is that the big lenders out there, which are like government sponsored lenders like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, if anybody's ever heard of those are big lenders. Like they own most of the mortgages in the market. And they allow these days, like in 2018, 10 properties per person. So if you have enough income, you can get up to that many. It gets a lot harder, a little bit harder after five or six, but it is doable if you were going to buy 10. Mm-hmm. But even if you only didn't want to borrow that many loans, like some people say, I don't want to have 10 mortgages. That's just crazy. I've known people who pay cash for every single one of them. Like you don't have to go out and get mortgages. I know somebody who he lives in Korea, actually. He's in the military and he owns properties in Montgomery, Alabama, and he just saved his money, paid $60,000 or $50,000 for each rental. And he bought one at a time. And then he saved all that rental income and then reinvested that into the next property and the next property. And they sort of snowballed from there without having a mortgage at all. So that's another possibility if somebody says, hey, I don't even want to touch mortgages at all.
That's amazing. It's almost like using your 9-to-5 income as leverage to help you get this future income so you can retire early. So I think that's a kind of a cool way to look at it. Most of us don't have great perceptions of our 9-to-5. It's sad, right. But the entrepreneurial world kind of really shuns 9-to-5s almost. So I think we get a lot of people that don't like those. But if you use that and you reframe your mindset as like, hey, this is going to help me get to my goals faster.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a cool way to go. So for you, you mentioned that some people like to pay for the properties in cash. What's your personal style?
Yeah, so I'm sort of a hybrid. Like I certainly, like when I first started, I thought about it differently than I do now. And we actually used a lot of leverage. When I first started, I had $1,000 in my Toyota Camry, 1995 Toyota Camry was basically all I had. So like I was prepared to sleep on those cloth seats in the back of my Camry if I had to. So I had to use a lot of leverage. I was sort of fortunate because I couldn't go out to the bank and get a lot of loans because I was unemployed. Like they saw me as an entrepreneur as basically unemployed. Mm-hmm. And so I had to get creative and I had to go out and find partners and people who had IRAs who they wanted to self-direct them and loan them the money to me, which is really cool technique. But I guess the point is like I leveraged a lot at that point. And since then, as we've sort of grown and got more stable, I'm more adamant about having some of your portfolio, at least, if not all, but at least some of it be free and clear of debt. And so for me, it's kind of a happy medium of, all right, I want a big chunk of my portfolio, and let's just call it, you know, maybe half of your real estate portfolio to be free and clear properties. And then another half I like to have with long-term, steady, low-interest mortgages. And the reason being, this is kind of more, a little bit more advanced because this is once you're farther along, mm-hmm. is that as you reach a certain plateau, you've grown your wealth, you have that wealth, but you need to worry about other risks. Like what happens if we have a Great Depression like we did in the 1930s and rents and values all tank by, you know, 50 or 75%. Well, if you own properties free and clear of debt, that's what's called a deflation hedge, where you have a little bit more protection if things really go bad in a down cycle. But on the other hand, a lot of people are worried about inflation. So having some mortgages and having low interest mortgages and having properties that will increase in rent typically, and you fix your mortgage expense. So like your mortgage might be $500 a month, mm-hmm. and your rent starts at $1,000, but like 5 years later, it's $1,500, and 10 years later, it's $1,700. And so that's a really nice thing when your rent's going up and your mortgage expense is staying the same. Like your profitability is going up and up and up over time. And that's happened to me a lot over the last 10 years. And so you want both of those. Like, yeah, free and clear properties are really safe and it's conservative, and I like that. But then also, you know, it's conservative to think about inflation as well.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a good point to bring up too. So with the rental markets, can you give us some examples of like some certain cities or states that you currently own property in?
Yes, I'm very local. My hometown is South Carolina, Clemson, South Carolina. It's like a small college town. And so I have some houses, some apartments that we rent to students. And so that's my sort of, you know, cup of tea. But I've worked with a lot of people. So I have people that I've looked at and analyzed deals with them all over the country. And one of the challenges I think a lot of your listeners will face if you're in a high cost of living area. So, you know, most popular big urban cities, like prices just go kind of crazy, right? And and often they disconnect from rent. And so that's what we as real estate investors always look at. Like, what's the ratio of the rent to the price you can pay for it? Mm-hmm. And another really quick kind of real estate nerd tip is that if you can, like if you're in a decent location, you typically want your rent to be about 1% of your total investment in the property. It's called the 1% rule.
Okay.
And so it's 1% is a really nice math thing, because like, let's just use an example. Like, let's say you found a property that you could buy for $200,000, like a duplex somewhere. Mm-hmm. So 1% of 200,000 would be $2,000 per month. Like if that property couldn't rent for $2,000 per month, if for example the rent was $1,200, mm-hmm. you would be a little bit more cautious and you would say, it's probably not going to cash flow as well. Gotcha. if you can't meet the 1% rule. And so going back to like locations and big cities, like if you go to San Francisco, like there's just no way to buy a property that meets the 1% rule. It'll never happen. New York City, not going to happen. And so you have a couple options there. Like one, you can like try to find properties that are in little pockets of the city, like go to niches, like just outside the city, 45 minutes away in the suburbs perhaps, or find a condo that's a little bit lower price. So you have to go to niches and look for ways to find locations within the city that might have a little bit lower prices. Mm-hmm. Or you can say, forget that. I'm just going to rent in the city and then spend all my money buying properties in another side of the country. And that's what I told you. My friend who's in South Korea owns properties in Alabama. And there's a lot of people from California and New York who buy outside of their general location. Mm-hmm. And so they go in and they fly to a market. They meet a realtor. They study it a little bit. You know, it's a little bit of work up front, a little bit more work up front to do that. But over time, you know, I was in Ecuador managing properties for almost a couple of years without being there. Like, you don't have to necessarily be there long term, but it does take the thing I warn, you know, it's not all like bed of roses with real estate. There's always some work, and the thing with real estate is upfront work. So like you're having to get a lot of momentum of learning the market, of getting things started. But after, I'd say, 2 to 5 years of doing that work, then it becomes a lot more passive after that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Have you experimented at all with any, because these are all longer term rentals, but have you done any short term rentals?
A little bit. Like I've experimented a little bit with Airbnb, and I think it's awesome. Like it's just not my niche. Like I do student rentals and I do long-term family rentals, but I know people, I have a friend, Lisa Phillips, who invests in like kind of urban areas and kind of revitalizing areas. And she does awesome with Airbnb.
That's so cool. And so,
Airbnb is another cool way to do that. Is like, if you're in a high cost of living city, you could use Airbnb for like extra bedrooms in your apartment or your house to make it more affordable. Or like my favorite is, we call this house hacking, where if you could buy like a duplex or a triplex or a quadruplex, or maybe a house with a basement apartment or a garage apartment, that would be my favorite way to get started, because you could live in the house and then rent out the apartment, or live in the apartment and rent out the house, either way, and get extra income. So like, if your mortgage is $2,000 a month and you can get $1,000 a month from Airbnb, you just basically cut your mortgage expense in half.
That's amazing.
And so it's really cool. House hacking is like, so I'm like a super like evangelist for house hacking. Like if people did nothing else, that they just like made sure their housing for the first 10 to 15 years of their adult life, was hacked, is that they could do that, they would make it make an enormous difference down the road.
Oh, for sure. And I think I first discovered that term from one of my clear back early episodes with Mindy Jensen.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I know you know Mindy as well. But when I heard that, I'm like, this is like the coolest thing ever. Like, it's so easy for us to all do.
Yes. Yeah. So definitely look into that. Like if anybody heard all of this and they're like, oh my God, 90 properties, 10 properties, this is all ridiculous. This is like, my head is spinning. Just think about like, could I use my residence to generate a little bit of income and start super basic like this? Hey, could I, you know, like I'm in a college town where they have football games, for example. And I know people who rent out bedrooms or even their whole house for like 5 or 6 weekends a year when people come in for the football games.
Oh, smart. You know,
Yeah. And so, I mean, there's so many ways. Like, and if you're in a cool area, if you live in a nice location, people on Airbnb want to rent your house. Mm-hmm. They don't like staying in hotels. They like to go to a place where they can have a kitchen and be more comfortable and have a backyard or a little patio or something. So, you know, think about that. Your housing is such a big part of our expenses. The last stat I looked at from the government records was like 33% of our average budget for an individual or a family. Wow. Is in housing. So if you can cut that housing bill in half or down to a third or even eliminate it, you know, you basically like freed up a third or, you know, 15% of your budget to then go invest it. You know, even if you didn't do real estate, other than that, you can go invest that in your 401k and mm-hmm. something else, paying off your debt. You know, there's tons of ways you could use that extra money.
I like it. I think this is all really cool stuff. So you mentioned your book a couple of times. So Retire Early with Real Estate is your book, and it's officially launching. Is it August 23rd? Is that correct?
August 23rd. Yes. That's the launch date.
That's incredible. Can we talk about the book writing process? How was it?
Oh, I'm not a female, so obviously I know nothing about like birthing anything. But that's, when I talked to my wife about it, she said, well, it sounds a little bit like, you know, the delivery process. So I said, yeah. I was like, I'm not saying it. You said it, not me. All right. But yeah, I love the end result. I love the process, and I love like teaching and sharing these ideas. So for me, the labor was more like I had 100,000 words or 120,000 words in me, and my editor was like, no, that's not. You need to cut that down. That's too much. That's good information. So I'm happy with the end result, because what I was trying to do was basically provide a strategy guide for people who said, you know what, I really would love to retire early or have financial independence, whether that means 35 years old or 55 years old, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. But they wanted sort of a roadmap or a guide. My metaphor for the book is climbing a mountain. And so like the peak of the mountain is financial independence, and there's a lot of plateaus along the way, like many retirements and things. And so the strategy guide gives you sort of different paths up the mountain. And I also share a lot of different stories. So I have 25 different case studies of different people, like Mindy Jensen is one of them, and Lisa Phillips that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. So I show examples, like there's so many different ways people have climbed this mountain using real estate, but there's some core principles. For example, I mentioned house hacking. That's a really good way to take those first steps up the mountain. And I talk about how that works and what the examples are. And then as you get further up the mountain, there's some strategies like a debt snowball, which probably your listeners are very familiar with, like something like the debt avalanche, debt snowball, mm-hmm. that people use with their personal finances to pay off their debt. Well, you can do the same thing with real estate. You can use your extra income. And so I show examples of how that works and how you might build those houses and then when you should start paying them off and what that looks like in the end. And so the idea was to have a strategy guide that people could then say, you know what, I have a plan. And then they go and get in the weeds of actually learning how to manage them and buy them after that. And this is the book they could use to sort of be their map to get there.
That's so cool. I love it. I can already tell that your book is going to be amazing, because even just the examples you've given today in this episode, I'm already learning a ton. So I'm really stoked to get my hands on your book too.
Thank you.
August 23rd, coachcarson.com is where everybody can go to get the book. Is it going to be available for pre-order?
It is. Yeah. So Amazon, if you go to Amazon and type Retire Early with Real Estate, it's already on there. So anytime you listen to it, it'll be available, and I'll have it, you know, plastered all over my website. Like go here to get the book. Bigger Pockets is my publisher. And so I want to give a shout out to them too, because anybody who is interested in real estate, Mindy Jensen's one of the awesome people who works there at Bigger Pockets. And it's a community. It's like the biggest online community of people who talk about real estate, learn about real estate. There's an awesome podcast about real estate, you know, everything's there. So that's the publisher of my book. And you can also buy it at Bigger Pockets and go to the store, because I have a lot of bonuses and kind of extra goodies that I give away with the book if you buy it directly from them.
Sweet. That's amazing. I didn't realize they were doing publishing either.
They're big. They're the real estate behemoth. they're awesome.
That's amazing. Very cool. And then CoachCarson.com. So I was looking through your site, and it looks like you help people figure out their real estate numbers and all of that stuff as well. Is this like one-on-one, or is it through a course format?
So I do have some courses. I did a lot of coaching in the past, and I did it kind of locally. And as I've gotten a blog and gotten a little bit bigger, it's just been harder. I still do some one-on-one, but it's typically with my students who took a course with me. So I love teaching. I think hope that shows through today.
It
that
does.
Just helping people understand the basics and kind of simplify it. It doesn't have to be that complicated. And so I do some courses that particularly I have a course on getting started in real estate. It's called Real Estate Start School. And it just takes you step by step by step and do this, do this, do this, and then have a community around it. We have a close community who helps each other out, and you can see examples of how other people have done it. And I jump on there and help and do monthly coaching calls. So that's what I'm all about at Coach Carson. I'm trying to kind of make it simple, make it approachable, help people kind of customize it, because there's so many different cities and different locations. And so how can we take some principles that work financially and then with real estate, and then help people apply them, help you apply them to your situation?
Oh, I love it. I think that's so cool. So before we wrap up, I kind of want to do something a little bit different. Are you down for some rapid fire questions?
Ooh, let's do it. That sounds great.
You are the first person I've ever done this with, so.
Yay.
I know. So you're not prepped, so let's see how this goes.
I like it.
All right, Chad, what's one purchase that you have recently made that's made your life better?
Oh, man. Well, we rented bikes, and I've always liked walking, but like we are kind of getting more into biking since we came back from Ecuador. I want to bike with our kids and bike our kids to school. And so we rented these bike trailers that my kids could sit on and pull behind. And we just had like this fabulous day. Aww. You know, I spent, I think $20 per trailer, which is not a huge amount of money, but I'm ready to go purchase like these trailers that are going to pull by my bike, because our kids had fun and we had fun and we're exercising and moving and also, you know, showing our kids how to do it. So that's my best purchase.
That's so cool. I like that. And then what's one location that you are dying to go travel to?
Man, I want to go back to Spain. I love Spain, and we love the language. We love the people. Barcelona is so great with the food scene. So we have friends there. So we really are in love with Spain and want to go back there again, take our kids there.
That's so cool. What's your favorite city in the United States?
Well, currently I'm in Fort Collins visiting some friends, Fort Collins, Colorado, and I've been super impressed with the city, the mountains in the background, the bike trails, the craft beer scene, which I love. So I can take a bike to a brewery like a mile away, and the kids can play and hang out in the lawn right next to the brewery. So
that's amazing.
I think Fort Collins is fresh in my mind, and it has pretty much like an adult playground, basically.
I love that. So if you like craft beer, you've got to come to Boise. So that's my plug.
Boise. I love Boise. Yes,
it's amazing. Yeah, come over here, and we've got a good real estate market too. So I think you'd
all
like
right.
it.
Awesome. I'll be there.
Awesome. Last question. What is the secret to financial success?
I think keeping it simple. I think that's my theme, is that you can get really complicated with this. You can, you know, find these fancy algorithms and spreadsheets, which I'm a spreadsheet nerd. Like, we're all nerds here, right? Mm-hmm. But I think keep that nerdiness simple. Like, you know, be focus it in, whether you're doing real estate or whether you're just like saving your money, like try to simplify your life a little bit. And I think we have so much going on. We're so busy that we're not successful sticking to stuff, whether it's an exercise plan or whether it's our budget or whatever, if it gets too complicated. So the simpler you can keep it, the more you're going to stick to it, the more success you're going to have over the long run.
Chad, you're a rock star. This was so much fun. I appreciate you hanging out today.
Oh, it was awesome. I'm really excited to be here.
Did you like this episode? I know I get a little weird sometimes. I'm sorry. If you did, then go and leave a review on iTunes or wherever the heck you're listening to this podcast. It would be amazing. So hopefully it's earned 5 stars from you. If not, send me an email. Let me know. What can I do to improve and make this show even better? Or if you have any guest suggestions of people that you're dying to have me interview, let me know. I'm always looking for really cool guests. So that's always a fun thing. I love this episode with Chad. I thought it was so interesting. The thing that really stood out to me was his definition of financial independence, where it's not necessarily about, I have to have $2 million in the bank and then I can do a 4% safe withdrawal rate. It had nothing to do with that. It was, I want to be able to spend more time with my family. Oh, I admired that. I thought that was so cool. It kind of gave me goosebumps, if I'm being honest. But I hope you enjoyed this episode so much. And if you did, make sure you take a screenshot of this episode, tag me on Instagram, and I will send it to Chad. It's so fun to see that you guys are resonating with this type of content.
Thank you so much for tuning in. And as always, I will see you next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Bye.